The Teaching Saints Virtual Summit was an incredible success. We had thousands of individuals tune in from around the world to hear from people like Brad Wilcox, Hank Smith, Casey Griffiths, Marie Eckersley, Jason Hewlett, Jeff Burke, and more as they taught us about how to better stimulate classroom discussion, create effective classroom environments, best practices with object lessons, and so much more. If you missed the summit, be sure to visit leadinglds.org/teach to watch the three most viewed sessions from the online conference. It will not only change you, but it will change those you teach. Check out the Teaching Saints Virtual Summit today. Leading LDS is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enhancing leadership ability and capacity of lay leaders in order to accelerate the mission of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Leading LDS is not owned nor operated by the LDS Church, and any opinions expressed on this podcast do not reflect the views of any specific organization. All donations given to Leading LDS are tax deductible and go towards the support of Leading LDS. For more information, visit leadinglds.org.
My name is Jared Goodat, and I am from Rexburg, Idaho. I think I first came across the Leading LDS organization on my Twitter feed. Through those Leading LDS Twitter posts, I became a quick follower of the Leading LDS content. Whether it's the social media posts or the website content or even podcast episodes, my leadership life in the church has been enriched by the Leading LDS organization. For example, there have been several specific podcast episodes that have influenced me in positive ways with regard to how I interact with members of my ward. I remember a specific Leading LDS blog post even that helped me understand the differences between conservative Mormons and progressive Mormons, which I hadn't considered before. And several comments from a Leading LDS website article that helped define my approach to helping repentant church members with taking or even not partaking of the sacrament. Leading LDS often adds what I would consider practical applications to the church's handbook of instructions and ministering resources. And the Leading LDS organization has been a blessing in my life and as I serve faithfully in the LDS church. Remember, be a leader, not a calling.
Welcome to the Leading LDS podcast. I can probably guess what you're thinking right now, and that is, who is this female voice? Well, my name is Alana Frankham. I live in Woods Cross with Kurt. We are happily married, and we have a home office here where Kurt does most of his recording for Leading LDS. And so my main job here is to make sure that our six-year-old and our three-year-old don't barge in while he's recording. And I think I do a pretty good job, or at least the editor does. But I think in this case, I can take the credit. So the reason that I am involved in this episode today is because Kurt interviewed Jody Moore. And Jody is probably my biggest mentor, and she's my life coach. And if I'm listening to podcasts, I'm either listening to Leading LDS or Jody's podcast, which is called Better Than Happy, which is so great. And I've also, so you should check it out. And I've also been involved the last few months in her coaching program. And when our family was in Southern California last week, I was able to attend an event that she did for the people in her coaching program, which was phenomenal and so fun to be there. And so I just love her, and I just had to be part of this episode. And so Kurt reached out to her and asked her to be on. And I feel like a lot of the things that she teaches the people that listen to her podcast and the people in her coaching program can really be helpful for a lot of leaders in this church and for just members in this church. And I love the name of her podcast, Better Than Happy. One thing that she teaches is that to live an extraordinary life or to be a better version of ourselves, sometimes we have to get outside of our comfort zone. And to be able to grow, we need to do hard things. And I feel like the church really helps us do that as individuals by asking us to speak or being in different church callings that stretch us. And I just love this concept, and I love all the other many things that we can apply through the things that she helps us learn. And so I'm excited for you to hear this episode, and I think that you will enjoy it. So here is Kurt's interview with Jody Moore.
Today, I find myself in downtown Salt Lake City on the campus of LDS Business College talking here with Jody Moore. How are you, Jody?
I'm great. Thank you so much.
Nice. Now, you're sort of an LDS celebrity. I don't know if you know this, but I've gotten several emails from individuals saying, have you reached out to Jody? You need to interview her. So I'm working on it. So
stop it some more.
right. So, and actually my wife is a big listener to your program and all your resources and she's here with me.
I'm joining today. I couldn't miss it.
That's right. So we have an in-studio audience with us, which isn't typical. But so tell us a little bit about your background. What makes you this LDS celebrity that
what
you probably don't
claim? What makes me so famous? All right. Well, it's my podcast probably is the reason people know me. My podcast is called Better Than Happy. It was recently Bold New Mom, and it's growing a little bit, so we changed the name. But I am a life coach. I work with mostly LDS women, although I have a lot of men. I have some non-LDS people as well, just helping people who want to kind of move from that space of good to great in their lives. So one of the questions I get a lot is, what's the difference between a life coach and a therapist? And I kind of try to describe it as a therapist or a counselor is going to be working more in the space of maybe some portion of your life is somewhat non-functional. So it doesn't have to mean that you're curled up in the corner in a ball by any means, but dealing with a problem, right, in some way. Whereas life coaching is really like just all of us as human beings who create problems for ourselves and who are trying to interact with one another. And so it's helping people really navigate their relationships, their money, their businesses, and really take everything to the next level. Yeah. So.
And this is an interesting concept because I think a lot of life coaches, I mean, the whole industry in general sometimes get us a bad rap.
Oh, yeah. Because, sometimes for good reason.
Yeah, right. And what do you mean by that?
Well, so life coaching is not a regulated industry, which means anybody can say, hey, I'm a coach and I can coach you. And that's not against the law. And so there's a lot of great stuff out there happening, but you get a mixed bag when there's nobody monitoring anything.
Sure. And that's the beauty of capitalism. If it doesn't work, then move on to another coach.
Exactly.
Right? That works. But because it's definitely played a role in our family, in our relationship where, you know, I'm going to throw you under the bus here, air your dirty laundry a little bit. But, you know, I think my wife's life experience is very similar to other LDS women where there's a lot of demands. You know, you're running a family, there's church callings, there's all sorts of things. And not that you don't experience that outside the church, but, you know, life gets hard. And early on in our marriage, there's maybe signs I thought, you know, is Alana depressed? Is this something she is struggling with? And, you know, we even went through, you know, she tried different counselors and things and they were fine. You know, she would go in and again, she wasn't like, you know, on the brink of suicide or really struggling with anxiety like some people unfortunately do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and seeing a weekly counselor sort of talking through things was helpful, but also it was sort of like after 6 weeks, it's like, well, should we keep going? And, you know, obviously we're paying for it every session. And then actually I take the credit of turning you on to Jody because, and I don't remember where I heard about your podcast, but I remember when I heard about it. I walked over, it was on another podcast. I heard about it. And I walked over to my wife's phone, pulled up her podcasting app and just subscribed to your podcast. And then it started popping up and then she started listening. And then we actually started listening together.
I was like, where did this come from?
How did this get on my phone?
Yeah. So, but we had just moved and I was busy and packing and started listening. And what I really liked about it is that, like, I could really apply the stuff. It wasn't just talking through, like, issues, but I could really go through and just, like, apply things that she was talking about. And so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And again, it wasn't, you know, the therapy was good, but really all she needed was, like, a third-party resource that sort of talked in her language and, you know, your how you articulate about feelings and things. And I personally in my marriage saw a total shift about how she responded to me. It wasn't, and my tendency of codependency and being the Mr. Nice Guy and some of these things that I always felt like, oh, it's up to me to keep my wife happy. And then once she sort of owned those feelings a little bit, like it really had a huge shift. So, but point being is that I think you give a great service because a lot of people think, well, yeah, maybe I do need a therapist or they are seeing a therapist, but at the same time, they're like, well, this seems like overkill or I don't feel like I need this set appointment every week, but sometimes having resources like yours makes all the difference. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm a huge fan of therapy as well and counseling. So it's not anything against that field. It's just a different space that I work in. And I do get a lot of people that tell me that the therapy wasn't quite the right fit or that they got to a certain point where it was really amazing. And then they kind of get to like, okay, but now what? And what you're describing with Alana and everything is just, oh, this is just being a human.
Right.
Exactly. Right. It's not a problem. It's just like, oh, sometimes I get sad and sometimes I get anxious and I'm not really sure why. And really understanding why and that it's not a problem either. And that it's not something your husband has to fix even. Mm-hmm. Just like reframing the way we're viewing the way we normally operate as humans. And certainly we have a lot of control over it too. But yeah, I just think when I discovered these tools, I was like, why didn't someone tell me this before? Yeah, right? Why doesn't someone teach us this in college or in high school? And so I feel really honored to get to teach it to people like you guys that are open to it.
Yeah. And really goes back to those tools and tactics, right? Because sometimes it's not that, oh, there's a chemical imbalance that needs to be addressed through medication. Sometimes I just need a tool or tactic that I can recognize what's happening and approach it with that tool.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
And also with this term life coach, you know, as a bishop many times, I felt like a life coach. You know, someone would show up and say, well, here's my problem. What do you think, Bishop? I'd be like, I don't know.
You know, let me check the handbook.
Exactly. Nothing's in there about this. And so I'm intrigued by this industry. And not that, like you said, it's not regulated, but there's still, I mean, there's various schools and things that you've gone through to, you know, round your skills of life coaching. So you're just not spouting your opinion.
Right.
Try that. See what happens. Right.
Yeah. I hear from a lot of bishops who tell me they listen to the podcast, that it helps them have tools as they counsel people. I was trained at the Life Coach School, and there are lots of schools out there training, but I honestly do think the Life Coach School is the best one. The tools that I use are really based in cognitive functioning and understanding your own brain. And so we have a tendency as a society to be focused on actions. What action should I take if I'm, you know, let's just even say maybe I want to make more money in my business. Then most people will give advice in what you should be doing or not doing. And some of that is, of course, necessary. But what we overlook is how we're operating and what emotions are driving us. Mm-hmm. And that matters as much or more as the action you take.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's powerful. Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit more about your background. Where do you live right now?
So right now I live in Spokane, Washington. I've got 4 children, ages 2.5 to 12. And then, of course, my husband lives there with us. He works in the business with me. We're business partners now. So we've kind of lived all over. We met in California, lived there for many years, both Southern Cal and Northern Cal. And yeah, prior to being a life coach, I worked in corporate for many years. I did corporate training and leadership coaching. So I love your podcast. I love to listen to leadership principles, and it's kind of a passion of mine as well.
Yeah, they're powerful for sure.
Yeah.
And pretty traditional upbringing in the church. I mean, lifelong member.
Yep. Born and raised in the church, as was my husband. So we're active members of the church and certainly have been on my own journey of finding my own testimony. But yeah, and that's the other thing about the coaching tools is when I went through coach training, I didn't know who I wanted to work with, but everything I was teaching to me was, I'm like, oh, that's the doctrine. That's just church doctrine. But it's, you know, different wording and some, I kind of say it's the how-to for living the principles and values I always have had. Like maybe I believe in the value of forgiveness, but how do I forgive someone if they've done something really terrible? How do I let that go? And that's what coaching has been for me and many of my clients, is the how-to of the gospel. So
yeah, that's great. And I'm curious, and as we sat down and before we recorded, we don't have necessarily a specific overarching theme of this podcast, but there's a few, you know, podcast episodes you've done and topics you've touched on that would be interesting to maybe explore a little bit. But my first thought goes to, what advice would you have, for example, bishops who, when I served as bishop, I sort of, you know, it's the only time I ever attended Relief Society and from time to time. And I'd sit in there just like, man, I sort of just get this feeling of hurt and of people not feeling, you know, their personal worth, individuals that just feel like they're not doing enough. And I sort of, as the bishop and the man inside of me, I wanted to provide a solution for that or encourage. And sometimes it just felt awkward, like, okay, you're the only suit in the room is standing at the front and trying to relate with this room full of women. And I could tell it just was not working. Mm. What can bishops do to really connect with women and give them the encouragement they need?
I think that bishops are doing such an amazing job. I think they have a tough job. I do find that almost any issue that I coach people on, at the very core root of the problem is that not understanding our own worth and value. And that I think if we all understood our value, most of our problems would go away, honestly. So I think you're right. And often women tend to be harder on themselves, not always, but in many cases. So I think for bishops, of course, to love them like they do, I think to recognize that sometimes people have to be on their own journey of discovering their worth, as much as we want to give it to them and show them and just be able to explain to them how valuable they are and have them see it. I think it's part of our journey here on earth, right? It's part of why God sent us here is to learn that. And it has to come in our own time and in our own way. So to be okay with knowing that, even though it's heartbreaking as a bishop to watch, to know that that's part of their journey. But finally, I would say to just remind them that, honestly, like I can remember bishops, you know, I didn't get married till I was 30. And so I was, you know, at one point thinking, am I ever going to get married? And what's gone wrong here? And I remember a bishop in my singles ward just standing up saying, you know, he gave this example of him growing up and being really into studying the stars and wanting to get a telescope. And his mom said, if you read this whole book, then that's all about the stars and the constellations and everything, then I will buy you that telescope. And he said that he didn't finish the book and he never got the telescope. But he said to us, you know, sisters at our Relief Society dinner, I remember him saying, I know that many of you sisters have read the whole book. And you're living your lives righteously and you're getting educated and you're working and you're active in the church and that husband still hasn't come along. You haven't gotten that telescope. And just know that God is aware of you and he loves you. So I think just those reminders that bishops give when they're prayerful and spiritual, I remember feeling in that moment like he's right. God loves me and God's aware of me. And that's how we find our worth.
Yeah.
So I wish I could say, here's how you help them figure it out.
Here's the 3-step process.
Yeah.
All right. It's going to be revealed today.
Right.
Yeah. And I love just how you mentioned the journey, right? And I think that, and you've talked about this idea of culture versus doctrine, and there's so many cultural things that crop up that we sort of assume are doctrine. And part of this is we discount the journey a lot for the sake of, oh, well, but we have the solution. And so just come here, read your scriptures, pray, go to church, and that's the solution and you'll be fine, right? And sometimes that message is so loud at church that they don't appreciate the journey they're on, right? Whether it's good or bad, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I even like to remind people that we're supposed to feel negative emotion half the time, I think. You know, it's opposition in all things, including opposition within us. And so reading your scriptures and saying your prayers is important and it is always the answer to your problem, but it doesn't mean that you're not going to struggle or be sad or be angry or have trials.
Yeah. Yeah. And really, I think it's you talk about this a lot on your podcast of just about feelings and recognizing feelings for what they are. And you sort of have a great approach of digesting that, right? And and processing it, I think, is the best way. What do we, you've done hours and hours on this, but what do we need to understand about feelings that's going to help, especially women in the church, begin to process them and appreciate the journey?
Well, so our tendency is to either resist feelings or escape them in some way. So we resist them by kind of tightening up, pushing away. And that comes from well-intended but misguided thoughts like happiness is a choice. And happiness is a choice, but it's not always the choice we want to have, right? So to resist them and kind of push back on them is actually what causes problems. Like we hear about heart disease and all these other things caused by stress or whatever other negative emotions. And I don't think the negative emotions are actually causing those. I think it's the resisting of those emotions that causes those problems. So resisting, the best way I can describe it is like a tightening against it. And that just intensifies the emotion. The second thing that we tend to do that's not always healthy is, like I said, escape them. And that can come in, you know, the form of eating food, drinking, you know, for me, it's like a Diet Coke, all the way to like much more harmful behaviors like drugs, alcohol, pornography, things like that. So we escape emotions in all different ways. The healthiest thing to do with emotion is, like you said, to just feel the emotion, to just allow it. And so it's the opposite of resisting. It's actually a relaxing into the motion, the emotion. It's a breathing into it. It's, you know, we talk a lot about this in the program about get out of your head and get into your body. What does it actually feel like to feel, let's say, sadness? What does sadness feel like in your body? Where does it vibrate? Where is it centered? Is it fast or slow? Is it hot or cold? And so it feels strange to people the first time they do this, but I'm telling you, you try it and it's gone. You know, you go in your body to try to feel it and you can't find it because it kind of cycles through. And then it might come back again because your thoughts are what are creating it in the first place. And if you still have those thoughts, it's going to come back again. But to just feel emotion, and that's why I say, you know, even to bishops, we want with best of intentions to help people feel better, just like I do with my kids, right? Like, don't be sad, don't be mad, but I teach them to resist emotion when I do that. So instead I try to say, it's okay to be sad. What does it feel like when you're sad? Tell me what that sadness feels like. Like, Heavenly Father created us, including all of these emotions. And so I don't think they're a problem. I think if we just say, yeah, I get sad too sometimes, and this is what it feels like in my body, what does it feel like in your body? And we teach people that it's okay, then it cycles through us and then we can figure out what's causing it and move on.
Yeah. I remember one of the more powerful phrase that I use in my bishop's office, and not that I came up with this or came to me, but just the simple phrase of telling, you know, you see him start to get teary eyed and they're sort of holding it back. And I'd say, you know, it's okay to cry about this.
Yeah.
It's okay. And then you see sort of open up and flood out. And
yes.
That's why we have like Costco size supply of Kleenex tissue boxes and such that we always just sliding across the desk, you know?
Yeah. That's good.
But just, and I think that's great advice for leaders that, because sometimes as leaders, you know, you're called whether Relief Society president or whatever. And then suddenly you have this person in the middle of trauma in their mm-hmm. life and they're looking at you like, I just don't know who else to talk about. And so just those simple processes of thinking, how can I help them just feel these emotions,
yes.
right? And process them.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And get through them, right? Where instead, and again, this is another example of some of those stigmas or cultural things that crop up is like, well, what you do is you just go to church and then you feel happy. And because everything's happy here. And so you should feel happy. And right. I think they're sort of beating themselves up with that feeling as well.
For sure.
Any other thoughts as far as feelings go? Or
I'll just say I've been, you know, recently on my own journey of really just trying to allow myself to experience emotions. The other principle that really helps me is I teach about the difference between clean pain and dirty pain. And clean pain is that like healing kind of pain, right? Like when we lose a loved one unexpectedly or something disappointing, our marriage ends or whatever, right? I don't want to feel happy about things like that. I need to grieve it in whatever way. And so I've coached many people who have resisted that kind of emotion and it just builds up and it intensifies and it can even cause physical problems later in life. Dirty pain is all the drama of like, this shouldn't be happening. This isn't fair. The gossip, the whatever, the resentment that doesn't feel cleansing. It kind of digs us deeper in that ditch. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and there's no people. Sometimes my clients will ask me, is this clean or dirty pain? I'm like, I don't know. Only you can decide that for you. Mm-hmm. But I think allow all the clean pain and connect with God and, you know, to know that he's mindful of you and it actually feels better. It's like having that good cry and you feel better after. Right. Yeah.
Nothing like a good, ugly cry.
Right.
That's awesome. And so the clean or dirty, it almost sounds like almost the dirty pain is oftentimes comes from just self-perpetuated. Like you fester over some pain.
Yes.
And so you're mixing up more pain, right?
It's the drama. It's the natural man. It's what the adversary tries to keep us stuck in.
Yeah.
And we all do it a little bit. So it's not to beat yourself up over it, but it's just to recognize like, do I feel better after I allow this and lean into this pain? Or do I feel worse and like I'm more stuck now?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's great. Obviously are we missing anything, Elena? Are we good? Or, all right, you can just elbow
feel free
me
to
here.
Pipe in.
That's yeah. right. With obviously you have different, yeah, obviously the podcast and different like general coaching programs and then one-to-one coaching. And you said it's both men and women that you coach, but I would imagine mm-hmm. primarily it's women.
Mostly women, yeah. Yes.
What are, in the LDS context, the LDS women that you help coach through different things in life, what are some typical trends that you see that come to you, or it's like, oh, I can tell you right now the three things that we're going to talk about just by what you just said right there, right?
Yeah.
What are you typically seeing at the top of your list when an LDS woman comes and sits down and says, coach me?
Yeah. Well, so I have the five pillars within my program. And so I developed those recently after I've been doing this about 4 years now, so not super long, but after 4 years of coaching LDS women, these are the five things that I typically see. So one is relationships. And it, because, and especially as women, you know, the statistics show that women tend to get our sense of joy and fulfillment out of our relationships. Like, I feel like I'm successful if I have good, healthy relationships, whereas a man sometimes tends to lean more towards if I have the career or the job or that side of life.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So relationships, whether it be the marriage or with children or in-laws or friends, any of those. The second area is health. So that includes physical, mental, and emotional health, which is a lot of what we've been talking about here. The mental health being, you know, what am I thinking? And helping women to become aware of their thoughts. Most people are walking around just operating at the effect of their thoughts, not really paying attention to them, not recognizing like I can watch myself thinking, right? And I can notice myself thinking, and I can separate myself from those thoughts, which gives me more leverage over choosing what do I want to think that will serve me. Hmm. So that falls under that piece. The third one is money. So, you know, similarly, if your money's really out of whack, it's hard to feel joy and peace in your life. So not just, I mean, I have some clients that want to make a lot of money and we can do that, but it's just getting to a healthy mindset with money, a healthy relationship with money really changes things. The fourth thing is confidence. So like I said, I think that's at the root of everything that we struggle with is recognizing our own value. And I teach that confidence is not a box that you check and then you're done. You have to have a confidence practice, a routine of speaking to yourself kindly and knowing when you make a mistake, you know, what does the voice in your head say? And can it be kind? Like, I love you anyway, versus what's the matter with you? Why can't you get this right? So confidence practice. And then the fifth and final one is what I call contribution. So I find that, and you know, even leaders like Stephen Covey and a lot of other people I really admire teach that contributing and feeling like you're contributing in the world in a significant way is a basic human need. And so some women have that need met when they're raising kids, which is awesome. But then the kids leave the house and now they have this need that's unmet. Other women are at home raising kids and that need isn't fulfilled for them by raising kids. And then they have guilt over why do I not enjoy this more? And then, you know, I have some women that are working. I mean, there's all variations of it, but overall, like having that need met and meeting that need, I should say, for yourself is an important part of like really experiencing, I think, the joy that is available to us.
So a typical coaching session, you're maybe focusing on one of these pillars or are they linear? Like you're going through each one?
No, they don't have to go in any certain order. So different clients, I'll basically start out with what's going on for you. Most of my coaching now is in a group format in my group program. But even when I was doing one-on-one coaching, I would have them give me an overview. What's going well in your life? What do you wish was better or different? And so where they pull from is going to be somewhere in there. That's where I begin. But I'll usually touch on all of it with everybody.
Nice. Maybe we can jump around here because these are obviously intriguing and it's a good model of approaching just life in general, right?
Yeah.
Because these are some big boulders that everybody needs to reconcile to some extent.
Right.
With contribution, that's interesting because on paper, the church, especially Relief Society, looks like a great model to find purpose and contribution.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the times with so many life demands, a lot of people are just showing up or... Mm. You know, obviously, you look at the ministering program. What a great mm-hmm. opportunity to contribute to somebody's life, but life gets busy, or mm-hmm. I don't know how to do that. Or what advice would you give to maybe a Relief Society presidency that's trying to stimulate more opportunities of contribution in a Relief Society when it seems on paper it's obviously there, but sometimes mm-hmm. they're not connecting?
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts?
Well, I love the shift that we've made in the church to the ministering program because. While I think it's going to be challenging possibly at first mm-hmm. to figure out, it's going to require a little bit more spiritual maturity because it's not just, did you go visit your person this month? Check the box. Mm-hmm. It's going to require that we really figure out what do I think that person needs, which I think along with that, in answer to your question, Kurt, could come what feels fulfilling and rewarding to me. Like, who do I want to be in this situation with this other woman? You know, what kind of relationship do I want to have? Because I think what creates a feeling of fulfillment is not the thing that we're doing. It's not our action. It really doesn't matter, right? Like, we see people in all different areas of work, right? And you can find fulfillment you know, you see someone that's a doctor, which seems like such important work, that doesn't feel fulfilled.
Yeah.
In somebody doing something that
and
seems
like they have
less
the highest suicide rates. As
yeah,
doctors
exactly.
And dentists. Yeah.
And so it's not the thing you're doing. It's what you're thinking about when you do it. Do you have thoughts like this is important and I enjoy doing it and I'm doing it because for the right reasons, right? Because I love this person and I want to give in this way, not because I have to and I feel obligated. That's what creates that feeling of fulfillment. So with the ministering program where we have a little bit more flexibility to figure that out and make decisions, can come that, I think, that feeling of like, this feels like me serving in the way I want to serve, not the way someone else told me I should serve. Mm-hmm. So I think as much as possible to have, you know, the sisters in your Relief Society involved in the discussion, which again, the new Relief Society format lends itself very well to. But ideally, the more people are, you know, this is a basic leadership principle too, right? The more people are choosing and feel a part of the decision making, the more engaged they're going to feel in the process of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Engagement's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can figure that out, I mean, that solves a lot of problems, right? And I love how you articulate that. And I'm just saying kind of a parallel example with, you know, in callings, when mm-hmm. I just think of a basic LDS mother who's got a lot of little ones at home, and then she has this other calling that she was asked to do, it wouldn't have been her first choice. And it's just this like torture process every time right. she has to prepare that lesson or go to Cub Scouts or whatever it is. How do you figure out that, that contribution or is it just something, a task that you need to do and get by, or should someone be more proactive there?
Yeah. I mean, I really try to teach, and like Alana and I were talking earlier about my podcast episode on service and boundaries.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really try to teach my clients that your life is too short for you to be doing things that you feel resentful about and for you to be showing up as less than at your highest level of integrity. One of the things I like to say, just to shock my clients a little bit, is that people pleasers are liars, right? Because if I say I would love to bake those cupcakes for that meeting, but I really don't want to, I'm lying, right? I'm not in full integrity with myself.
Yeah.
And so I say that on purpose because it really, then they're not people pleasing, right? They're not liars. But anyway, my point is that what if you could operate in full integrity, which is to say, I'm really overwhelmed with my own kids right now. And as much as I want to do that, I can't do it in the way I want to. And so I have to say no. Now, people will say to me, oh, so we just shouldn't do anything we don't want to do. Right. And
I'm
saying,
great.
I say, no, I think we all need to keep working on ourselves and try to get to a place of wanting to do it. So like the example I give is several years ago when my daughter was selling Girl Scout cookies and the leaders said, we need someone to go stand outside Walmart for the day with the Girl Scouts and sell cookies. Can you do it? And my initial reaction was like, no, that sounds terrible to me. That's the last thing I want to do. And so in full integrity, I should say no, but I can play with in my mind, like, can I find a loving reason to do it? Not like they're going to judge me and think I'm not a good mom if I don't, or any of those kinds of trying to control other people reasons, but can I really get to a loving reason, which is I love my daughter and I love those leaders who do this volunteer job as her Girl Scout leaders. And so if I can do this one thing out of love for her and love for them, even though I don't really want to do it, that's a good reason to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So like, that's what I mean is take the time though to find that reason. And ultimately the goal is that we all become like Christ, who can always have a loving reason, right? And who didn't have to say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do it, right? That's the ultimate goal that we're all working towards.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I mean, I don't think it's up to other people. You know, I hear this a lot, like, why do they keep asking me? Why did the bishop ask me to do this? Can't he see that I have these things? Or why do people keep asking me? I'm like, because you say yes, right? We have to be the ones to say, and I'm not saying that you should turn down a calling or not. I don't know. That's up to, you know, you and the Lord, but you have to be the one to set boundaries.
Yeah.
And you can't wait for other people to read your mind or do it for you.
Yeah. There's so much there. Going back to, you said that, you know, some people say, well, am I just supposed to say yes to everything? Or is that what they say?
Or no, they'll the say, opposite. Just no, if I just don't want to do it, then I just don't do anything.
Right. Nor are you saying that you are supposed to say yes to everything, but find right. a loving purpose to do it. But sometimes you just have to figure out how to say no, right?
I do sometimes. I'm like, I love that you asked me to do that. It's a no for me. I can't get there in my head.
Yeah.
Is there someone else that can do it? And, you know, and sometimes I'll say, this is what I could do instead. Can I contribute money towards the cause? Can I do this thing?
Yeah.
And, you know, we all have our own ways of saying no. But honestly, like the motto I try to keep in my head is I love you and no. And it's not always those exact words, but it's some version of that. Because we think saying no has to be confrontational or whatever. And I'm like, not for me. I don't know how they're going to react. But for me, it's always, I love you. And it's a no for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's a big challenge, I think, for a lot of leaders where they sort of feel like, no, I was called to this position. And yeah, I may be called a Relief Society president or a bishop. But really what that means is you're the person that says yes to every crisis that comes to your, doorstep. Right.
Right.
And took me a few years to figure out as a bishop that, you know, I cannot, if somebody is being evicted tomorrow and they randomly call me on a Thursday night when I'm with my family, that is not my problem to fix.
No.
And I would figure out a way to just say, you know what, I cut checks on Sunday. Mm-hmm. If you can figure something out till Sunday, I will be there and we can talk further about it. Right.
Yeah.
But man, setting boundaries is so crucial, but it makes sense on paper, but sometimes it's really
it's
hard
totally
to do.
Totally challenging, yeah. But it keeps you as the bishop in that loving space, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than, it's really hard not to build resentment and things when we don't do that, when we don't set clear boundaries.
Yeah. And when we do those things, I love that, how you articulate that we find a loving reason why we want to do it rather than, well, a good member of the ward or a good Mormon girl, a good Mormon
right.
boy would do this.
I should.
And so I better do it. I should.
Yeah.
Right. Or else then you're attaching your self-worth to
yes.
who you are. And that's just not helpful.
No. Right? I mean, you're not any more worthy because you did it.
Yeah.
It's true. And you're not any less worthy if you don't.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Anything else with contribution that would be worth mentioning that we haven't done? Obviously, you.
I guess the final thing that comes to mind for me is, and it speaks to this idea of culture versus doctrine, mm-hmm. that, you know, I don't know. And my clients will ask me sometimes, should I go get a job? Should I stay at home with my kids? You know, the proclamation of the family says this, or even like my husband. You know, he should be working, right? It says that. And I'm like, you know, I think when it comes down to it, that again, I think we have to have a higher level of spiritual maturity and that the doctrine never changes, right? And the doctrine isn't that prescriptive. Mm-hmm. The culture is, and we gather these ideas of what we should or shouldn't be doing from the culture, but you have to get really like prayerful about what is right for me and my family. And that is not the same for everyone. And so, you know, I was at a Time Out for Women conference a couple years ago, and the speaker said, yeah, you know, we're supposed to be there for our families and take care of our families. And for some women, that means that they're home with their kids all day. And for some women, that means that they go to work because they need to help contribute to the family income. And for other women, that means they go to work because going to work keeps them sane and happy. And so they're a lot better able to be there for their kids when they're home. I just think we have to be, you know, prayerful about ourselves and then not judgmental of everyone else and what their family should look like. And especially when it comes to contribution, I hear that a lot.
Yeah. Awesome. Anything is in regards to relationships. So we've talked about it a little bit, but I feel like sometimes the auxiliary leader, the Relief Society president, the bishop is always like, well, what we need to do is just have another activity. If we can just get people in a room with cookies and talking, then they'll be like best friends and then all our problems will go away.
Cookies go a long way. I won't lie.
But as far as like advice for leaders to help stimulate healthy relationships or maybe that's not even their job, but we confuse it that it is.
I mean, here's the challenge is that we're all so very aware of the people outside of us, whether it's my spouse or the other people in my ward or my children or whoever is not showing up in the way I want them to or expect them to or think that they should. And then we think that's the reason for our struggles. And that's where I see the most problems in relationships is if this person, my sister-in-law, if this lady in my ward were nicer, more friendly, if they weren't so clicky, whatever it is, then I would feel welcomed and I would feel comfortable. And we can't control people outside of us. This is what I teach my clients is I've tried and it doesn't work. And as soon as you figure out how, let me know and I'll start teaching that. But what we can control is ourselves. And it has to come back to who do I want to be in this situation? So I was just talking with a friend of mine who was sharing a situation with me and she was worried about what people were going to think. And I kept trying to remind her, you can't control what other people think. And as soon as you start trying to, that's when we get in fear and insecurity and vulnerability. All you need to control is what do you think of you and what do you think of other people? That's it. So I don't know how that looks in a ward activity, but certainly like in counseling that church leaders are doing is to keep, you'll notice when you hear people talk in a relationship struggle, they want to talk about the other person. And many a times my clients, because they're loving LDS people, they'll say, I mean, I love them. They have all these good traits and they want to kind of cushion it with that. And then comes all the thoughts that are causing them the pain. Like he doesn't do this and he should do that and she should be different. And that's the reason they're in pain. So you have to bring it back to who are you when you think about that person that way? How do you feel? And who do you want to be? This person is the way they are. Let's just assume they're going to keep doing all those things. Who do you want to be? How do you want to feel about you? And how do you want to feel about them? And that's, I mean, again, you look at Christ as the perfect example of that. People did not treat him kindly in many cases. And they did not always show up the way we think people should show up. But he was so clear on who he is and who he wanted to be that he was at peace with it.
Yeah. And I think what I'm hearing you say is that it really isn't something that you can, you know, as far as stimulating relationships, you can't solve this issue with just a magic lesson that if you get this lesson just right and generally speak to it, it really starts with the individual. If every individual shows up and has gotten to a place with themselves where they're okay, for example, in the ward where I served as a bishop, a very transient ward, and I have many people come to me and say, man, Bishop, I'm new in this ward. I just don't feel welcome. Like nobody seems to talk to me. And I would say, you know why? Because they're new too. They got here 2 weeks before you or 3 weeks, right? And so I'd say, I would love it if you were the person that went and sat down next to them in Sunday school and you really took that upon yourself. And then you would be the person that's reaching out to them and then they feel welcome, right? And it just perpetuates itself.
That's exactly right. Well, even that thought, nobody talks to me, right? Then they're going to feel nervous. And when they walk into church, they're going to notice all the people that aren't talking to them. And then we make that true. And then we kind of hurry and leave the meeting quickly at the end because it's embarrassing or it's uncomfortable when no one talks to me. We literally make our thoughts true. So that thought, nobody ever talks to me, is not a fact. It's what I would show them. I'd be like, that is just a thought. And you make it true when you think that. What if you thought, people love me. People can't wait to get to know me. And I love them, right? And how would you feel differently if you believed that? And if you went in with that idea that, or even just like my best friend is here. I just don't know who they are yet. And they don't know who I am yet.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a completely different cadence with that. With that thought.
Yeah.
And just the whole idea of, and I think you're articulating codependency in some way when you're constantly worried about what other people think of you. And this, I feel like it's magnified when you're suddenly put in as the bishop or the Relief Society president or Elder's Quorum president. Then it's like, I need everybody to like me because if they don't like me, then I won't hit my goals or they won't do ministering visits or whatever it is. And so there's this constant battle of trying to please everybody. Right. And so I think that's a powerful principle of just realizing I can't control what they think of me. I will do my best and aim towards, you know, what goals I have or purposes I have, but it's up to them to determine how they feel about me. And it's not my job to control that.
And even just, I'm not for everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone's probably not going to love me because I'm not everyone's flavor. Yeah. Right? Like, I'm not trying to offend anybody, but there might be some people that don't care for my style and don't care for my approach. And that's okay. I can still love them. It's like when my kids get mad at me about something and I say, well, you can be mad at me and I still love you and there's nothing you can do about it. Right? Like as a church leader, you can do that. It's not always easy to do, but I like to just know I'm not for everyone. Sometimes some people are not going to care for my approach or my style.
Yeah. Yeah. And what a wonderful way to articulate that to somebody. Maybe there's a disgruntled ward member who's finally come in and talked to the bishop and you can just say, you know what? I'm doing my best, but I'm not the bishop for everybody. And I'm sorry that you're in the ward at the time when I am bishop, but this is where we're at.
Like my approach, I realize doesn't really resonate for you. For other people, they're going to love that approach, right?
Yeah,
totally. Like I think that thought, it sounds strange, but it really is freeing. Like I'm not for everyone.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to me that just having those conversations and being honest about it, like that perpetuates the relationship still. It doesn't mean that now that that person feels this way, that we can just flush that relationship potential down the drain.
Right.
But recognizing it and saying, I'm not for everybody, but you know, how can I help? How can I show that I still love you?
Yeah.
Goes a long way.
Yeah, so, for sure.
I just want to touch on these as we wrap up.
Okay.
Health. Generally speaking, in the LDS context, we have a health code.
We're very healthy.
So we're the specimens of biology. When
right.
Anyways, so any thoughts with health as far as in the LDS context that would be helpful?
Yeah, I mean, we are very healthy people.
Are you saying that?
No,
with a little sarcasm.
No, I'm okay. Serious. Like relative to the rest of the world, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
We're not heavy drinkers or smokers or
but
anything.
We love our swig. You know,
we love our soda. We love a treat. We have to have a cookie at every meeting, which, you know, I like those things too. I do think that's where, you know, for myself anyway, you look at all the, to your point, the word of wisdom and all that we know and all the things that the world takes a little bit longer to figure out at times. Like my coach, Brooke Castillo, she stopped drinking. She's not LDS. She stopped drinking because she realized that the alcohol was separating her from her own emotions and from being her best self. So she stopped drinking. She stopped eating sugar and flour. She lives a very healthy lifestyle. And her main reason is that she wants to be connected to her emotions. Mm-hmm. And I look at, you know, what we do even with fasting once a month. And I'm like, it's really a similar principle. Like we want to be connected with God, who we do experience often through our emotions, right? So I do think that for myself, it's not for everyone, but I think I have an opportunity to definitely cut out the Diet Coke and the swig cookie or whatever that I love, because it disconnects me a little bit from where my spirit truly is and maybe from the spirit even at times. Not that it's an evil thing by any means to have a cookie, but I think I have a little opportunity there. It's really much more the coaching I do is around, I would say, like the mental and the emotional health.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think just in general, the word of wisdom, you know, sometimes, you know, the culture of the church hangs on to just what the nose and the word of wisdom thing. Well, I'm not doing that, so I'm good there. But that approach of stepping back and saying, what in my life is disconnecting me from my emotions or from my relationship with my spouse or with feeling the spirit, right? And I'm always pushing myself that way with the word of wisdom and just as an example. And it may not even be related to health or what I'm eating.
Right.
But just that
it's
state
true.
Of mind. Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Money. Just pay tithing. That's what you tell me. Are you paying 10%?
Make sure you pay your tithing. No, I think that, you know, it's helping people get to a more abundant mindset is the work that I'm doing. Because when you recognize that what you have is so much, it's so much easier to create more. But I do also love to talk about money because, you know, money's such a taboo subject to most of us, or it's just private or personal or whatever.
Or it's related to evil, right?
Yeah, or it's the root of all evil or whatever. And I think that money actually just makes you more of who you are. So we see sometimes examples of people with a lot of money that might be manipulative and greedy or worldly or whatever you want to call it. But I think there are just as many people who have a lot of money that are really generous, righteous, loving, kind people. And I think money emphasizes who you are because it allows you to extend yourself further, right? If I have money, you know, like I like to sometimes when I'm with my kids and we're going through the drive-through at McDonald's or whatever, and I'll say, let's pay for the people behind us and let's see if we can drive away before they even see us and can even thank us or anything. And they like to watch their reaction because they're confused and surprised, you know. And then we try to drive away. And what I'm trying to show them is that, like, I like to be generous and I don't have enough money to be as generous as I would like to be, but I can buy McDonald's for someone every now and again. Mm-hmm. So the more money I have, the more generous I can be, right? So I like to help people make more money if they want more money. And you don't have to want more money out of scarcity and lack and ingratitude for what you have. And in fact, it works far better to be so grateful and abundant and recognize how blessed you are and then create more money and do more good in the world.
Yeah. You know, a big thing, and welcome everybody to my personal coaching and therapy session, but this has been a recent one for me in regards to money is many times, and individuals close to me and some of the leading LDS audience knows the impact that running a nonprofit has on our financial situation.
I can imagine.
But sometimes I find myself defaulting to thinking, actually, I think God sort of wants us a little poor right now because we can learn so much from it. And that's such a limiting mind frame where now I'm trying to approach things of saying, actually, I'm the one in the way of my abundance. And I need to have a shift of mindset there that it's not that the heavens are punishing me with financially because I've made these decisions or whatever, or because they want me to be a stronger servant and a sharper tool. But really, it caused me to look inward and think, what mindset am I constantly in that's causing me to not have this abundance mentality when in reality, there's so much out there for me for the taking.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I'll coach you on that next time.
Okay.
And I love what you bring up a lot is to have this abundant mentality is to, you know, say, look around your home. Like I have running water. Mm-hmm. I've heard you say this.
Yeah.
I have lights.
Light.
A husband.
You know, even if you find yourself in a place where you're not having this abundant mentality, like look around you and you can all, there's so much that we do have.
That's true.
So and that's a good foundation to start. Just really realize abundance is already present and more is to come. Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Confidence. Teach me to be more confident. What would you say about confidence in the LDS context? Because that sounds a lot like pride, Jody. And you
know,
pride.
It does, right? Yep. I do get that question a lot. Like what is the difference between pride and confidence? And I'll just share, I think, a personal experience that articulates it. Because I'm a pretty confident person, I feel like, for the most part. But I think I still have room to improve on it, as I guess we all do. But I was with my coach recently, and I was asking her, hey, you know, when I go see my clients, like Alana, I have clients all over the country, and so I don't see them in person. So when I do go to a live event, and I see a lot of them, and it's so amazing and wonderful, and they all want to come up to me and tell me how I've changed their life and how they just adore me, and it's like so kind, and I appreciate it, and I'm just so exhausted. I just want to go in a room and shut the door and not see anyone, and I don't know if it's the stimulus or what that's about, and she was asking me about what's going on in my head. And I said, well, I'm very conscious of not becoming prideful, right? So when somebody comes up to me and tells me that I changed their life, I'll usually just smile and thank them. But what I'm thinking is, I did not change your life. You changed your life, right? Like I tell this to a lot of people whose lives don't change. And then they'll say to me that they think I'm so amazing and they just love me and adore me. And I'm thinking, that's so kind, but I'm not any better than anybody else in this room. We're all amazing and wonderful. And what my coach showed me was like that to me feels like not becoming prideful, but she said it's still eroding my relationship with myself and my confidence. Because if I were standing with my sister and somebody came up to her and said, you changed my life with your work, I wouldn't whisper in her ear, you didn't really change their lives. They changed their life. Right. Yeah. And if they said, you're so amazing, I adore you, I wouldn't say you're not any better than anyone else in this room. Don't forget.
Yeah.
So I don't think that pride, you know, I think that we still have room to go with confidence. Pride to me is not recognizing that I am amazing and I had nothing to do with it. Like Heavenly Father created me. And so I'm trying to get to a place of when people tell me they think I'm so amazing, just remember what they're saying is God did such a good job on you. And to be like, I know, right?
Yeah.
But I had nothing to do with it, right? Yeah. And everyone is equally amazing. And like I said before, nothing we do increases or decreases our value or worth. I had a woman say to me, she asked me to come speak at a singles conference once. And she said, you know, we really want to help them with confidence. But please don't just tell them that they're children of God because they've already heard that and that's not really going to do it. And I was like, but that's the answer. I mean, that really is the reason why every single one of us is equally valuable. But then knowing that emotionally, not just intellectually, and speaking to yourself the same way you would to somebody else you love, like I would to my sister, is the trick, right?
Yeah.
So.
Wow, that's powerful. And I think a lot of times, you know, you'll get this, let's say someone gives a sacramenting talk and not that it was like exceptional or general conference worthy or whatever, but people come to me and say, wow, you did a really great job. And it's our role to say, oh, please. Oh, stop. Oh. No. Like deflect. Right. But just to say thank you and recognize that, well, maybe I did. And that's not, and it's not because I'm being prideful, but that I'm a child of God. And that's why anything I do is remarkable.
Well, we all have a relationship with ourselves. We have that voice in our heads. And again, would you say to your kid or your spouse or whoever the same things that you say to you?
Yeah.
Even if it's just that deflection, right? We don't deflect it for one another. We're like, you did. That was amazing.
Yeah.
Why can we not do that for ourselves?
Yeah. Right? And sometimes we're so afraid of being that prideful that we're like whipping ourselves with our weaknesses. Yeah. But remember about this area that you're weak in that area. And
Then
we don't allow ourselves just to absorb it and have it build that confidence, which is so important.
Well, and that's the other thing I do teach is that confidence doesn't mean like, you're right, I'm amazing and I'm good at everything. That's not confidence because all of us know we're not amazing at everything, right? Mm-hmm. Confidence is owning and embracing all the parts of yourself. It's owning and embracing like, I did a good job on that talk. And I'm terrible at planning and organization. And none of it means that I'm any less valuable. It's embracing all of it, right? And not that you have to air all your dirty laundry to everyone, but that you don't, there's nothing to hide. Like yeah. We're all a mess. It's okay.
Yeah. And just own it, right?
Yeah. Own it.
That's awesome. Well, as we wrap up here, I have one more question for you, but where would you send people if they want to learn more about you, your podcast, your coaching programs? And
yeah. My podcast is called Better Than Happy. So you can find it on iTunes or anywhere else pretty much that you listen to podcasts. And my website is just jodymoore.com. So it's Jody with a Y. And you can find out a lot more about me and a lot of free resources and things on there as well.
Kind of a random question, but applicable here is that obviously for in the context of a bishop, somebody, obviously we are encouraged. We have LDS Family Services. If therapy is needed, you know, definitely use it. And obviously you would never discourage anybody from, you know, going to therapy and trying that and,
sure.
Receiving that to help. Mm-hmm. How would you suggest to a leader, maybe a bishop, to use a resource like a life coach or in helping somebody sort of process some of these emotions or hard times or the people that come in and see him?
Well, I think, you know, obviously to whatever's going to be helpful to people to be open to it. I mean, I try to give a lot of things away for free even. So to direct people to a podcast, the podcast is completely free, obviously, even a lot of free webinars and things. And, you know, it's kind of, it's the same way when I recommend a book to someone is I'm like, I don't know if this will resonate for you, but here's a book you might want to check out that I thought was useful. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And I think that's helpful because a lot of times I remember meeting with individuals and I felt like they don't need, I see no sign or red flag that necessary therapy's needed.
Yeah.
But I can tell they're sort of tired of coming here once a week and talking to me. Who I don't have a lot of answers. We read scriptures. We have, you know, it's spiritual, whatever. But it would never hurt to just say, hey, why don't you listen to this for this the week, along with your scripture study and all these other things that you'd encourage as well.
And, and especially if you can say, I listen to this and I like it, or my wife really loves this, or somebody I know really loves this, you might want to check it out. Yeah. You know, it's just like recommending a movie you like.
For sure. So definitely all you leaders out there, check it out. And Elena, I've got one more question. Like I said, I've asked 4 questions since then, but anything we're missing? Anything you'd add?
No, I just really love these principles. When I listen to Jody's podcast, for example, she had one about lovability recently and I'm just like, huh, what could I learn more about lovability? But there's always something I'm like, whoa, like, why didn't I ever think about that before? Why didn't I think about it in that perspective before? And so it's really great to think about these things. And I think that this podcast we're recording right now has been great. And I think it'll be really helpful for leaders. And so thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Last question is, as you have been a leader in life, helping individuals, doing your podcast, really finding your purpose in this, how has being a leader made you a better follower of Jesus Christ?
I think that, you know, the leadership opportunities that I've had in my career, in my family, in church callings and things like that really honestly make me appreciate how challenging it is to be a leader. I even remember calling up some of my bosses sometimes saying, I'm so sorry. I was so difficult when I worked for you. Now I get what you were trying to do. And of course, Christ is, you know, the ultimate example of just unconditional love, lovability to your point, you know, like really so consciously aware of his value and worth and his mission and what mattered in the end that I don't know. It's super challenging to do. I guess that's the thing that stands out for me is the more I do it, the more challenging I realize it is. And just the more grateful I am to our Savior for filling in the gaps because I'll never get to that level in this life. None of us will, but luckily we don't have to, thanks to the atonement.
That concludes our interview with Jody. And I just love her so much. I just love everything that she says. It makes so much sense. And I hope that it helps many of you out there listening and that you go to her podcast. And if there's a leader, a bishop, or at least LDS president out there that knows somebody that maybe doesn't need a stronger resources like therapy, but could use like a little bit of coaching or just help like struggling with something, then Jody's podcast and website, I think it's a great resource to maybe turn them to if you feel so inspired to do so. And just thanks so much for listening and for being a part of this community. It's such a great blessing for our family. And I'm so grateful that I could be involved today and meet with Jody Moore. And I also too, especially we thank the people out there that are donors, that are core leaders. And thanks again.
And don't forget, visit leadinglds.org/teach to check out the 3 most viewed sessions from the recent Teaching Saints Virtual Summit. Until next time, be a leader and not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. When the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.